But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen.
Keep pushing through it, and you'll make it through the day.
No matter how bad things get, life is beautiful, and things will always be better. Everything is worth it.
Scared? Alone? Unsure of what's to come? This podcast is for our brothers and sisters who struggle with homelessness. Join us on this journey to improve our mental health, to challenge what's possible, to become who we are. Let's ignite hope one spark at a time and set our dreams on fire.
All right. Good morning to my Street Strong community. So grateful for every one of you out there. We are now in Indonesia, and we're in Great Britain and Washington State. Talk about the most opposite places in the world, but we are so grateful for every single person who's tuned in, who's rated the podcast. This is ultimately about a community of people around the world, however big, however small. It could be just seven of us out there, could be 7,000. It doesn't matter. What matters is that we all are here to talk about issues relating to homelessness. We're here to empower each other. We're here to inject hope into the veins of folks who are down and out and need a boost. We're here to share best practices, practical tips to make homelessness a little bit more bearable, to bridge the gap and inspire others into action so that we can really get out of this, secure that apartment, get a job, and get back on our feet, seeing our kids again, beating addiction. That's what this is about. It's about changing the game, and we do it together as a community. Today is going to be a really exciting episode. It's called A Secret to Sanity, and we're going to talk about a revolutionary way to improve our mental health through communication. Communication. You might say, well, I communicate all the time. I don't need this podcast. Let me tell you, my friends, we need this podcast. We need it today. We need it today because even though we all communicate, right? We open our mouth, we talk. That does not mean we are actually communicating. Okay, that just means we are opening our mouth. Doesn't mean we are communicating. Communication is very simple. If you're a hummingbird up in the tree somewhere and you sing a song and the little lady hummingbird a mile away hears the song and flies over to you and gives you a kiss or something, whatever the hummingbirds do, that might be pretty straightforward for two hummingbirds. Okay, every organism communicates in the world. Fire ants communicate. Okay, I don't know a thing about fire ants. Maybe I'll do an episode on fire ants. I probably won't because it has nothing to do with homelessness. But every organism, to include plants and fungi, they all communicate, right? But do they communicate well? Yes, every single one of them probably does communicate very well, except for human beings. Human beings do not communicate well. If we communicated well, there would be no war, there would be no hunger, there would be no homelessness, there would be a lot less problems around the block if Lord help us all, we learned how to communicate. So I can't wait to talk about what I've learned when it comes to communication and how specifically that can empower folks who are homeless, it can empower folks to get back on their feet, to build connections. And that's what good communication really does. It's about building meaningful connections within yourself, between each other, in communities. It's about fulfilling our needs, right? Good communication means we can help fulfill our needs. We can fulfill the needs of those around us. We're going to also talk about an incident I had between a stranger and a scooter in Southern California. We're going to also talk about how society shapes the way we communicate and how we can challenge that and how changing the way we communicate can revolutionize our mental health. So exciting, so happy, can't wait to do this. I really think that human beings need to get this right. The stakes are high. There's nuclear weapons all over the planet. We've got to learn how to communicate. And it really starts with the messages we send ourselves and the messages we send to the people around us. I'm going to open up this episode talking about a man named Marshall Rosenberg, and he will not be on this podcast today. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2015. If he did show up on this podcast today, I would probably start praying and end the episode because I would be in shock. He was a wonderful man. I wish I could have met him, but it doesn't matter. What matters is he has blessed us with a lifetime of really powerful perspectives when it comes to communication. He was an American psychologist, an author, and a teacher. He helped mediate disputes, even in remote tribes around the planet. So this guy knows how to communicate. He knows what goes well with communication, what doesn't go well with communication. He developed the theory of nonviolent communication. It's a process that focuses on empathy, compassion, self-expression, and active listening. And you might think that you do that every day. I might think I do that every day, and I'd be lying to you if I said I did. I try to do those things. But as you will see, I fall very short of that. And I wish I didn't. I wish I hit a bullseye when it came to empathy, compassionate self-expression, and active listening. Rosenberg really worked on transforming the ways we think, communicate, and interact with each other because his goal was to foster peace, understanding, and mutual respect. Boy, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice if we had peace, understanding, and mutual respect? A little old lady today, very innocent looking, no disrespect, I'm going to bite my tongue. She, at the grocery store, just pushed her cart. She just pushed her cart out into the abyss, and it nailed another car. Now, again, I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. Maybe she's having a bad day. Maybe she just lost control of the cart, and it's moving pretty fast, and she's a little bit older, and she couldn't chase it down. But this is what I'm talking about, right? That was not an act of respect. It did not communicate or express the idea that she is thinking of others and trying to foster connection. All it expressed was, I don't really care about anyone but myself. And even if this damages somebody's bumper or passenger door, who cares? I just got my Girl Scout cookies. So, and this was today. This was today. This wasn't even a planned story that I was going to share with you on the podcast. It wasn't even planned. And that just goes to show that we are surrounded. We are surrounded by very hostile environments where people don't always communicate and respect each other. Now, I spend every Friday on Skid Row, and Skid Row is a very dangerous place. My friends on Skid Row are the first ones that tell me that. They don't feel safe there, and they live there themselves. It's not safe. And they say it all the time, that people are sometimes pretty nasty to each other. I'm not saying everybody is, but when times are tough and when folks are not feeling good, it's very easy to kind of take the shortcuts and be irritable with each other. And so we're going to go over so many great pearls of wisdom here about how we all need to kind of cut each other some slack, because at the end of the day, there is so much to how we communicate with each other. And I'm not just talking about words from one person to the other person. I'm also talking about, shoving your cart into somebody's car, right? I mean, forms of communication, which include actions. It includes what we don't say in conversation, right? Not just what we say and how we say things. So there's just so much meat on the bone here. And when I got into Marshall Rosenberg, it blew my mind. It changed the way I see the world. I'll be honest with you, Street Strong community, friends, when somebody made me angry in the past, my instinct was to just bite back. I almost felt like the bubbling rage in my stomach was a signal that I had to act on. That if I didn't, I would be selling myself short. Someone would be taking advantage of me. That's how I've really acted my whole life. That when somebody wrongs you, you have to show them anger, scare them away, intimidate them, call them a name, you know, I grew up with two other siblings, and that was how it was done, right? You know, I don't turn the other cheek. I elbow them in the face, right? And it's not a good way to go. It's not how we do things. It doesn't get our needs met. Because when I elbowed my brother and sister who are older than me, and I was like 7 or 8, I just got 10 more elbows in my stomach and tickle fights and all kinds of unpleasant. So my point is, retaliation and anger, even though it's our instinct to do that, it's really not effective. It just invites more pain, more aggression, more confusion. And Marshall Rosenberg was a big believer in the idea that we have to be nonviolent in the way we communicate. Okay, we have to be compassionate. We have to listen to what other people are really trying to tell us. If we can master communication, my friends, if we can do this together, we can make our lives a heck of a lot more peaceful, which is all the difference when we're in a really chaotic environment like Skid Row or on the streets and we're homeless. We've got to do whatever we can to create environments of peace and of clarity. We've got to reduce the chaos. We've got to bring on the love, the compassion, the connection, right? Good communication brings good connection. And that's what we need when we're on the streets, when we're couch surfing. We need to build connections. We need to connect the dots. I talk about it in almost every episode, how we're always one question away from changing our lives. We're one chance encounter. We're, you know, solving any problem is about connecting the dots. And if you're out there right now and you're struggling with homelessness, the bedrock of how we make those connections means that we've got to learn how to communicate in a way that really expresses who we are and what our needs are. That takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage, and it's not always easy. You know, I have friends on Skid Row who have been to prison, and they have anger problems. And, you know, every bone in their body, it takes every bone in their body to not lash out at somebody who they think maybe disrespected them. And they're, you know, it scares them because they don't want to go back to prison, right? And you know, so figuring out a way to communicate with each other when we're in the thick of it, right? When we're really feeling anger and we want to retaliate, that's what we've got to learn today. And we're going to learn that today, which is amazing. And I don't expect anybody, including myself, to go, oh my God, I just learned how to communicate. I'll never have a problem again. This takes practice. It takes practice. And we've got to really believe in what we're doing. And I think the way Marshall Rosenberg describes communication, you will believe in why he thinks this way and why this is a better way for you moving forward. I want to open this up, this a larger conversation now about a personal experience I had. It sounds kind of silly, but it's going to really help us understand Marshall Rosenberg and nonviolent communication. And we're going to have a little fun with this today, okay? So about a year ago, I was in Southern California on one of those scooters, okay? One of those electric scooters that goes about 15 miles an hour. You feel like you're going 90 sometimes when you're flying down the street because it's just such an adrenaline rush. But I'm on this scooter and, you know, going a little bit too fast and I'm kind of getting nervous about the speed. So I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to ride my scooter on the sidewalk for just a minute because I'm kind of in the part of the city now where I feel like I could easily get clocked by a minivan and I don't want to die on the streets of Southern California because I didn't ride a scooter properly. So I take a quick right turn and I'm now on the sidewalk and this guy, I'm kind of like, you know, what's the word when you're on a scooter? I don't know, buzzing. That's what it is. I was buzzing towards this guy who was probably my age in his 30s and he was fine. He had enough space. I had enough space. He was walking. I was on my scooter. I was going 10 times faster than him. He was pretty slow. And the guy goes, I'll never forget these words. And I don't know why it just seared in my memory so much, but in a very whiny undertone, he said, you know, you're not supposed to ride those on the sidewalk. It says it on there. And by the time he was halfway through his sentence, I was already like in Madagascar. I mean, these things go pretty fast and I just blew past him. Now, I bring this up because I did not communicate myself very well, just by nature of riding on the sidewalk, right? That was not a smart way for me to communicate. It wasn't healthy, right? Because what am I communicating when I do something like that? I'm communicating that I don't really care about other people in my way, that I just need to get somewhere quickly. Part of the reason I had to get somewhere quickly is because they actually time you on the scooter. So every like minute you're on there, it's a couple bucks and you're like, I got to get off this thing, right? So that doesn't help things. But anyway, I didn't communicate my best self by even riding on the sidewalk, okay? He communicated very clearly what his perspective was, right? You're not supposed to ride it on the sidewalk. It says it on there, right? He communicated something to me that I thought was at least more constructive than what I did in that moment. I also didn't respond to him, which was basically no communication at all. But I want you to just take note of one really important point here. And this is why communication is so hard for all of us out there, right? It's so hard for all of us out there. Because I was going fast and we were going in opposite directions. I didn't even have the time to stop my scooter and talk to him about why I used the sidewalk, right? And I used the sidewalk because I was genuinely afraid of my safety in using it on the street. I felt safer on the sidewalk, okay? Had he known that I felt safer on the sidewalk, that I'm kind of a, you know, nervous Nelly when it comes to cars and driving, and I've been in car accidents, and it's kind of a sore subject for me, maybe he would have had more compassion if I had stopped and said, you know, I'm sorry. It is kind of inconsiderate for me to use the sidewalk. It, you know, it maybe it even kind of scares you because I'm zooming in your direction, and maybe now you're afraid, but I have these fears about being hit by an SUV or minivan and being launched into, you know, the next, you know, the glass of the Dunkin' Donuts down the street. And I think had I stopped, you know, had the scooter not been timing me by the second, right? Every second I'm being charged money. Had I not been going so fast, right? We could have maybe had a healthy form of communication. Now, you may kind of chuckle to yourself and say this is all kind of ridiculous, but I'm trying to make a point here, right? And that is that society structures our communication, right? It structures it. In this case, it was a scooter. That was just the speed of it that was structuring our inability to communicate, right? But society really crunches us all for time, right? I mean, it just crunches us for time. We're always running around. We have no time. And so it's so rare that two people even stop and have a conversation about what they really mean to say, and they get to say it how they want to say it, right? Because we just got it. We got, oh, we're late for work. We got to run to work. You know, we have nine other things on our to-do list, or we're just spent. We're stressed. We live on the street. And life is hard and it's dangerous. And we don't always have time to just collect our thoughts and talk about what's really on our mind authentically. We don't get a chance to express ourselves authentically. And I think that's because, and I'm not, you know, this is not like a political statement. I don't make political statements on here. I try not to. But, you know, capitalism is a crunch, right? It's 9 to 5, make that money, honey, let's go. And bam, we don't have time to really have meaningful conversation. And so I would like to just say right off the bat that the structure of our lives makes communication really hard. It's why I didn't stop for that guy on the sidewalk and explain myself, right? And that's a problem. You also see this in society all the time where any Hollywood movie and it's full of violence and war and fighting. Even dinosaur movies, there's dinosaurs fighting humans and they didn't even live together, right? And there's dinosaurs chasing humans down the suburban street, eating them alive. So our culture is just, there's just violence everywhere. I read a study once that there's the average kid sees 16,000 murders on TV before they turn 18 years old or something. And so when we feel like the world is violent and nobody can be trusted, we don't even want to communicate with other people because it feels unsafe. COVID just happened. COVID taught us that communication is unsafe, that we need to keep 6 feet of distance, that close interactions with fellow humans can spread disease. There's good reasons we did that. I'm not here to criticize that. I'm sure it saved a lot of lives. But nonetheless, a consequence is that communication is dangerous. So not only is it dangerous, and we also don't even have enough time for it. So how are we ever going to be able to talk to each other in a way that really expresses who we are when communication is so hampered and restricted in that way? I just think that's a darn shame. And it makes me sad, but it's so liberating, right? It's so liberating to understand this, because now we have a way to kind of overcome it. And we're going to talk about that. Marshall Rosenberg makes a point that, you know, for 8,000 years of human civilization, we've always looked to authorities about how, you know, we should feel and not what's alive within ourselves. I'm going to make a point here is that that guy who told me that I'm not supposed to ride on the sidewalk, it says it on there, he said that as if a cop could stop you and that's why you shouldn't be riding on the sidewalk. And to me, that's what Marshall Rosenberg is saying, right? He's saying that we don't even know how to express our needs. Like that guy, he didn't even, you know, he looked to an authority figure to express his needs. His idea was, well, the cops will crush you if you do that. You shouldn't do that. And that's fine. That's a valid argument. But what about the way he felt? You know, he would have been a lot more effective had he said, hey, buddy, I'm really nervous. You're way too close to me. Or if he had yelled or jumped out of the way, I would have felt genuinely bad. I would have never used that sidewalk again. I might have even stopped my scooter and comforted the guy and said, hey, whoa, I am so sorry. I didn't know that this would be like such a big deal. So I'm going to go ahead and take my chances on G Street because I don't want to see you upset, right? But even he didn't really tap into what Marshall Rosenberg would say was alive within himself. He didn't even tap into what was alive in himself. He just said, oh, the traffic cop will get you. And of course, that's not going to make me change. I mean, don't get me wrong, folks. I don't break the law. I don't think I was like Bonnie and Clyde by using the sidewalk either. But I mean, my goal wasn't to just like thumb my nose at authority here. I was focused on my own safety. I was a little nervous, trying to get my bearings straight on this wobbly scooter going so fast. So at any rate, I hope you have an appreciation for what Marshall Rosenberg is talking about, how, you know, we are structured to not communicate very well via society, how we don't have access into what's alive in ourselves. And quite frankly, it takes a lot of courage for that guy to say to me, hey, I feel kind of nervous right now. And it takes a lot of courage for me to say, hey, I'm kind of nervous. I don't want to use the street. And maybe I'm being selfish and I shouldn't be selfish. And that takes a lot of humility and courage. The price of not doing that, though, is your relationships are going to sour. They're going to suck, for lack of a better word. When we choose the easy path and say, well, this is just more comfortable to ignore the guy and keep scooting along. Sure, that might have felt good in the moment, but it did not help me become a better communicator. It did not help me authentically express myself. It really wasn't a good idea in hindsight. And so, Now, your argument might be, hey, Tommy, hey, yo, you don't have the time to stop for that guy on the scooter. I mean, that's ridiculous. Who's going to stop and have a full-blown conversation about this? I agree with you, but my counter argument to you, my friend, would be we mess up our lives a lot more when we take these shortcuts. And I don't believe in shortcuts, and that'll be a different episode someday, but I don't believe in shortcuts. The fact that I'm still talking about this scooter thing is just proof in the pudding that that wasn't really a shortcut. Here I am still rambling about it. So anyway, I digress. And I do want to say lastly about this scooter guy. It's a really good thing that neither of us insulted each other. I think insults make the world a lot more complicated. And we don't need that, you know. You know, I could have told him that he was being a living, breathing, wet sock. You know, I could have told him that he's being an emotional vacuum cleaner, sucking the joy out of everything. You know, I could have told him that he's a half-baked potato with no filling. But you know, I didn't. And I'm glad I didn't, because that would have escalated things. And, you know, the world is dangerous. You never know if people have weapons on them or anything. And this comes full circle to Skid Row, right? We've got to communicate honestly and not escalate situations by being aggressive, by being judgmental, because aggression and judgment are going to bring on really bad outcomes, maybe deadly, dangerous outcomes, especially on Skid Row. And this is why communication is so important. It's so important because folks who are struggling with homelessness, they've got to communicate their needs all of the time. They've got to communicate it on the streets, which are dangerous. They've got to communicate it when they're walking into a homeless shelter and they need a bed and they need a meal for the day. When they're trying to make connections between, and other opportunities. It's just so darn important. Now, getting into the meat and potatoes of Marshall Rosenberg, he talks about evaluation versus observation, okay? Evaluation and versus observation. And this is so important. Okay. And this is what we just talked about. So let's lead off with a great quote, actually, by an Indian philosopher named Jiddu Krishnamurti. And he said, the highest form of human intelligence is being able to observe without evaluating. In other words, observing something, but don't judge something, is the highest form of human intelligence. And I love that. That's a powerful quote. I hope we all think about that and talk about that later. It's just so powerful because judgment is, first of all, I've come to learn that judgment is a waste of our time, right? Because you cannot possibly know everybody. That guy could have said, you know, in fact, I'll even reverse it. I could have said about that guy, man, that guy's such a loser telling me what to do on my scooter. What does he care? I was in his way for like 1 second, right? So if I had just said, oh, he's a loser, well, that's not very intelligent of me, first of all, because maybe he was a really good guy who actually was even worried about my safety to an extent. Maybe he was worried about the safety of people around us. Maybe he was a very compassionate guy, and that's why he spoke up to begin with. And here I am calling him a loser. Here I am getting irritated or defensive, right? And so observing without evaluating is the highest form of intelligence, because I couldn't possibly know enough about that guy in that moment to know that he was either a good or bad person. And certainly you can't evaluate that based on one moment you have with somebody. I see this on Skid Row all the time, right? There's folks at the soup kitchen and somebody cuts in line or says something nasty to somebody else. And I've had a buddy on Skid Row who, you know, he'd been to prison and he wanted to lash out. He wanted to get aggressive, but he stopped himself because he doesn't want to go back to prison again, right? And you know, we worked together on this. And basically we said, you know what? We don't know that other person. The person might be going through something that they cut you in line at the soup kitchen. It's not a polite thing to do to cut someone in line. It's not an excuse to cut anyone in line either. But before we get angry, before we evaluate and judge, we should sit back and be curious and do our best to be patient, because the last thing we want to do is really hurt somebody who is actually a very good person, maybe even somebody who would protect us and care about us and vouch for us. We just don't know other people. So evaluating or judging them is silly and it's not good. It's also very expensive, emotionally expensive. I notice when I judge people, I get tired. I can't prove that. I don't know if I have like a research paper to prove that to anybody out there, but why don't you all reflect with me right now? And how do you feel when you judge somebody? How do you feel when you're in a judgmental mood? You know, if you're like me, you feel drained. You don't have energy. Judging people doesn't energize you. It doesn't make us feel more confident, more happy, more safe. It just actually makes us feel like the world is more chaotic and like we can't trust it. And it drains us. And that judgment involves so much energy that we could have used for something else. And Lord knows on Skid Row or on the streets, we need every bit of energy imaginable to lift each other up and to achieve our dreams and overcome our obstacles. So judgment is expensive. Well, after I judge someone, I feel like I just lost on a scratch-off ticket. You know, that feeling like, I didn't get 3 clovers in a row. I got 2 clovers and a donkey, which is like the opposite of a clover. And when you lose on a scratch-off ticket, you feel kind of drained and like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. That's how I feel when I'm judging someone. And so Marshall Rosenberg would say nonviolent communication is about observing. Don't judge. Why do the religions always say, well, only God can judge? Well, I think the reason is that, you know, we are just not intelligent enough to even be good, to be good judges of character. It's somebody else's job. And the pain that we feel from judgment is a proof. It's proof that we're not designed to do it. If you had a house plant and you watered that house plant with Dr. Pepper, it would shrivel away and die. Okay. And that's nature's way of saying Dr. Pepper is not good for houseplants. They're not supposed to be watered with Dr. Pepper. That's not how they grow. It's not how they thrive. It's not how this is done. Same analogy, when we judge people and we feel dirty and we feel drained, it's probably a sign that we were not put on earth to judge other people. And we're not going to grow because we have the energy to grow, because that energy was just stolen from the energy it takes to judge somebody. Your emotions are like currency. They're like dollars in your brain, if you will, or in your heart, or in your soul, or in your stomach. Be careful how you spend your emotions. And I tell myself that all the time. Let's not get in the business of judgment when we're not very good at it either. Okay? Marshall says, avoid criticism, insults, wrongness. It changes anyone, right? It never changes anyone to insult them. What happens when you insult someone? They just insult you back. And now you feel pain. And now you're even more drained because now somebody insulted you. And now you're self-conscious about it. You know, one time when I was in grade school, I said something really mean to a girl that broke up with me because I was hurt. You know, I felt rejected. If she's listening to this right now, how dare you? No, if she's listening to this right now, apologize to her because I said something really awful. I was an adolescent kid and I was hurt. And then you know what she did? She called me. You want to know what she did? I'm going to tell you guys this. I hope she's not listening anymore. I don't want her to be gratified with this, that it's still on my mind. She called me chubby. Okay. I was a chubby kid. Like I would try to tuck my shirt in at piano recitals. Anyway, I was chubby. And you know what? The price of my insult to her is that for an entire lifetime, I was self-conscious about my weight. And no, she didn't make me feel that way, but she hit me really hard. And coming from someone I really liked in middle school, that burned and it made me feel a certain way. And look what happened. So this is what I'm talking about, right? When homelessness is already so darn difficult, when we don't know where our next meal is going to come from, we don't know where the next place that we can sleep will be. The last thing we need to do is muddy up our lives with judgment and with criticism and inviting more pain into our lives. It's not gonna work. It's not a good way to get things done. If you want to simplify your life, think about nonviolent communication. Think about bringing kindness to the world that you live in. It's the right thing to do. It's also the practical thing to do. It's going to save you energy. It's going to save you time. You know, I see this on Skid Row a lot, right? People have stuff they can't let go. And we all do, right? We're all human. But on Skid Row, it's like maybe an old grudge or something somebody said or did. And there's so much trauma. I mean, no one's asking anybody to let go of trauma. I mean, that has to be processed with a professional. I urge anybody out there to, you know, seek mental health care if you can find it. Talk with your homeless shelters. Talk with your, you know, the folks, the people there who are out there helping to see what you can do. But my point is there's so much heartburn and hurt out there from our past. And it can make us want to drink and numb out that pain. And so the last thing we want to do is make our life more complicated. Can do is just communicate to ourselves that, hey, I can't judge. I'm not here to judge. I'm not even here to judge myself for the way I feel right now. I'm not even here to lay judgment on myself. I'm not going to call myself bad names. You know, in depression, I always see patients beat themselves up even harder. Oh, I should feel differently. I shouldn't feel this way. I'm such a loser. I'm such a bum. That is communication. And we have to work on nonviolent communication with ourselves. That could be a whole other podcast episode. I'd love to have one. I'd love to hear your questions about it too. But it starts with us. It starts with the people around us. And it's about making a beautiful, simple life for ourselves and for the people around us. Rumi, one of my favorite Sufi philosophers and poets said, there is a place beyond rightness and wrongness. And I love that. And it's so true that not everything's right or wrong. It just is. And we evaluate everything. One of the last things I want to chat about before we go, folks, I hope you've been enjoying this as much as I have. It's been fun. Rosenberg talks about feeling versus needing. Now, had I said, had the guy that I was asked to, had he said, "Hey, Tommy, I feel like you are really inconsistent," you know, I would have felt that he was blaming me for the way he felt. And I would have been maybe I would have been a little maybe aggressive or defensive about him saying that. "Well, I feel like you don't care about others." So it's like, "Well, I'm sorry you feel that way, but that's not what I intended," right? So Rosenberg talks about, instead of talking about how you feel, try to talk about or think about what you need, what your needs are. Now, that guy probably had a need for safety. I had a need for safety. That's why I was riding on the sidewalk, right? Had I said, "Hey, buddy, I just have a need right now to feel safe. It's been a really tough day at work. I've had an unsafe past at times. I've been through some almost life-ending car accidents. I need to feel a little safe, and I'd really appreciate it if you're okay if I could just scoot past you this one time." Now, I think I would have been a lot more successful if I had been able to express that. It's a need rather than, "Hey, I feel like you're being a jerk for calling me out that I'm on the scooter," right? See the difference between those two situations? Well, if I talk about a need, there's a lot more room and space for empathy, for understanding. But if I say, "I feel like you are being a little traffic cop that doesn't get paid for it, and I don't need you here. I don't see your badge. Buzz off." That would not be effective. And so just talking about our needs is so important, right? I have a buddy on Skid Row who got kicked out of his sober living facility because he smoked weed one time. Rules are rules. I'm not here to tell any organization how to run their organization. Again, another episode if we want to talk about rules and common situations in homelessness when it comes to sober living facilities. But he got kicked out for one joint. And, you know, he could have said, I don't know what he said in that moment. I wasn't there. But he could have said, "Hey, you guys are jerks. Like, what the hell? It was one joint. Come on. Like, I'm not smoking fentanyl. I'm doing the best I can. I need a place." That's where he could have maybe made some headway by articulating his needs. "Hey, I have a real need for safety. You know, I've been beat up in the park 6 times in the last 2 years. I don't feel safe out there. I get that I didn't, you know, obey the policy, and it hurts me that I lowered the standard, and I want to make it up to you, but I have a need for being safe. And for feeling safe and for feeling protected, and it's just crushing me, and I think that would create some space at least for more meaningful conversation rather than this tit for tat insult match that, you know, would just make both people more defensive, and then nobody's going to get to stay in the sober living, and there's going to be bad blood across the board, right? Because if you started with needs, you could say, "Well, here's my need. I have a need for safety, for security. What can we work out here? You know, maybe about my potential return. What can I demonstrate to you that would allow you to meet your needs as a sober living facility, right? Maybe you need me to meet a certain standard. Is there a way that I can reinforce that standard even though I slipped up? Is there something I can do to fulfill this for you and what your needs are," right? And so when we talk about needs, it's so much more healthy. And it's so much more beautiful. And I think that's one of Marshall Rosenberg's most powerful philosophies is needs, 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 needs. And this doesn't mean you're needy. It doesn't mean, you know, people owe you anything. It's just that we all have needs. Rosenberg believes that all kinds of communication, all forms of communication, period, ultimately depend on our needs. We have needs, and that's why we communicate. Even trees, even anteaters, even monkeys and sea lions, they communicate because they have needs. Maybe they need a mate. Maybe they need food or a nest. But we all ultimately communicate based on needs. And it's very important to start there and not get into ego and say, "I feel this way," or insulting or criticism. we're going to wrap up with some practical tips. And you've probably already heard these in the podcast, but I just wanted to summarize them for you. Recognize the fact that all of our communication is a form of a need that we're trying to express. I think if we all realize that together in on the streets and homeless shelters and sober living facilities, we're going to understand that, you know, people are going through stuff. They have needs that aren't being met, and maybe that's why they're reacting that way. That we don't need to judge them or pile on the stress and the hurt. Life is short, right? Let's focus on their needs. Let's talk about needs together so we can fulfill them together. And that's so much more powerful. That's such a better way to handle our own mental health and help empower other people to meet their mental health. I also want us to talk about, when it comes to practical tips, when the next time you're flustered, think about your energy. You can go ahead and be flustered. You can be angry. You can lash out. You can do anything you want. It's a free world. But ask yourself, what's more important right now? This, you know, me telling this guy off, or the energy that I'm going to burn by doing it? What's more important? What do I need more now? Do I need more that he's going to be pissed off? Or do I need that energy to serve my needs and to help heal the people around me? Ask yourself that. What's more important? Because remember, when we criticize others, how many times are they going to go, oh, you know what? That's right. I am a jerk. I'm a total jerk. I'm so glad he told me that. I'm a jerk. I'm a jerk. I'll never be a jerk again. Notice that never happens. So insults are a waste of your breath. They're a waste of your time. They're a waste of your energy. And you need the energy. The third practical tip is simplify your life. Right now, we're all time crunched. We have a lot going on. We go on social media and we doom scroll. We use, not me, but on the streets, a lot of my good friends they'll use drugs because life is such hell and it's so horrific and scary sometimes that those are the only tools that they feel they know how to use to feel better. But I would say let's simplify our lives. Let's try to keep the chaos down to a minimum. Right? And that involves being kind, and it involves listening, and it involves trying to genuinely connect with each other and hear each other out and understanding the needs of other people. So that would be my third practical tip, is to just kind of simplify your life. Never quit your drugs immediately. There could be withdrawal effects that kill you. So always consult a medical professional when the stakes are high, when using drugs, when it comes to that stuff. Please, this is not clinical advice. It's never been clinical advice or medical advice. This podcast is all about just practical tips and feel good perspectives that I've learned on Skid Row to kind of spread the love. I do want to quickly answer a voice message from Ruth Ruthless about fun. For those of you who want to hang out for the Q&A here, I also encourage all of you to send me a voice message. In the show notes, I have voice message capability, so you can actually send me a voice message. I listen to every single voice message. I will respond to a voice message that you send me, hell or high water. I will be doing that. Okay, and so please send me a voice message. You can also send me an email at streetstrongpod. I'd love to hear about your best practices in your homeless shelters, what you're doing, what work, questions you have, what resources you need, the creative energy. I love it. We're in this together. So with Ruthless, Prop 1, for those of you who are unaware, Prop 1 is a measure being voted on in March in California with respect to how homelessness is going to be approached in the future in the state of California when it comes to funding, when it comes to resources. You know, Ruthless, I don't tend to take policy positions on this podcast. So anything I do take is strictly my own and nobody else's. It's strictly my own opinion and nobody else's. I just want to throw that out there. I support Prop 1 as a person. I support it. I support Prop 1 because this new law would emphasize housing. And I think that's it's a seismic step forward in the battle to stop homelessness. Because for decades now, everybody, you know, the stigma out there for homelessness has been really unfair and really inaccurate and dumb, right? People look at our fellow brothers and sisters on the street who who, by the way, are literally just us, and they became kind of down and out and hit tough times. I mean, it's not like there's a homeless group and a non-homeless group. We're all part of the same group, and things happen. So aside from that, housing is everything. And we've had this false idea for decades that, oh, the people who are out there on the streets, they made bad choices, they're addicted. If you really look at the data, though, the truth is that so many people are homeless because the rent is too damn high. And it's a matter of, you know, $300 to $500 that they didn't have because we're not building enough homes, and property rates are through the roof and they're out of control. And I don't know if they're even connected to reality even. And that boxes a lot of people out of homes, and it makes rent completely unaffordable. And then wages don't go up as much as profits from other people and from other parts of the economy. So I think that homelessness is a big economic issue, actually. And it has a lot to do with cash and resources and housing. And so for a major policy like this to recognize the fact that there is just cash and housing as a major dimension of homelessness, that's a huge step forward. And it's going to actually keep people in their homes. And my experience on Skid Row is that when people, even if they're addicted to meth, when they know they can get a home, they're actually a lot more careful because they don't want to be on the street. These people don't want to be on the street. They use drugs because life is really scary and horrible, and it's hard to be out there on the street. You're not sleeping. And so they use meth to keep themselves awake. They use heroin to numb out the pain. I'm not saying any of that is a good idea. It's deadly. It kills you. It's terrible. Fentanyl's in everything. But I'm just trying to say that when they know there's hope, when they know there's a home around the corner, they don't want to use typically. They want to have a home and keep it stable and see their kids again and cook a meal and have a toilet. So yes, housing can absolutely change the game. And there's so much more to the bill in terms of how the money's going to be structured. And there is some controversy in terms of, you know, the state having more control than the counties now than they used to have. We can debate that all day. But I encourage all of you out there to research Proposition 1 in California. It's really good to know about homeless issues on a, you know, local, state, national, even global scale. It's really important to know what's going on, how it's going on. Ruth, your question made me a better podcaster. It made me a better citizen. I very much appreciate you highlighting that. And it taught me a lot of new things I hadn't really looked at when it came to Prop 1. But yes, I think Prop 1 would be great. I think we have to prioritize housing a lot more, in addition to more mental health facilities and addiction facilities, in addition to outreach for veterans. We've got to go out there and do things differently. The fact that major bills are being passed and major changes are being made is a darn good thing for homelessness, because it shows that people are on the move, they're on the prowl, they know it's a problem, and we've all got to lift each other up, and that's how it goes. This was an awesome episode. It got me excited to talk about it. I hope you can take away even one valuable nugget and spread it to other people. Nonviolent communication. It's the secret to sanity. It's how we get out of this crazy world and get into connection and meaning and hope and empathy. Build bridges, connect the dots. I love you all. Until next time, thank you for tuning in, and please send me a voice message. Send me your best ideas. Can't wait to hear from you. All right, signing off. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Street Strong. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this podcast with every single person you know who is struggling with homelessness. And remember that famous line from Mr. Rogers: when the day turns into night and you're way beyond my sight, I'll think of you.